This is Big Girl Pants Podcast,
where we talk about women, health, power, and wealth.
Hosted by
April Melton
and Kimberly Shapiro.
We are real women with real jobs doing real life.
Join us while we showcase inspirational stories and inspirational people.
Come on, y'all. Put your big girl pants on and stay tuned. So I want to talk about coming back and trying to fit in as a civilian, what that was like for both of you.
You guys are kind of soft. Why are you guys so sensitive?
Me?
The civilians in general.
Yeah. But I also was about to say, I feel like this is where you'll find, if Ian's anything like me, this is where the conversation will become much, much less jovial.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if that makes
That's
sense.
That's why I'm trying to can you tell this is my like serious tone?
Is that your serious,
voice? Podcast tone? But I mean, initially when I pitched this, this episode / this conversation to you guys too, I wanted to talk about the PTSD and what that looks like and how it manifests itself in your life and how you realize that you had it and what you did to kind of not combat it, right? Because it doesn't necessarily ever go away. But what that looks like now in your life, like,
I mean, you want to start? Yeah. The only disclaimer I want to put on it before.
And please.
PTSD is not only just associated with veterans.
No,
so
I know.
I just want to put, because people that always hear PTSD, they always think veterans.
Of course.
Anybody can suffer from it.
Yes.
It is so different from person to person.
And honestly, we don't even have to call it PTSD. We can just call it PTS because it's just post-traumatic stress. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to have a disorder or a label.
You're dealing with change. So,
right.
Yeah.
Dealing with change. Or dealing with an event that had so much of an impact on you that it has now, you know, impacted your life. Like,
and there's not one more, and there's not one more extreme measure that can justify the term PTSD and what. Like, even Duncan talked about that too. Like, I didn't do as much as the people before me, so I didn't feel like I had this. That's a problem with it a lot too.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't have this because I didn't fight in World War II. Like, I didn't invade Germany.
Right.
You know? So that keeps people away from getting the help they need.
Right? Yeah.
But yeah, you go ahead, Duncan, with your side of it. And
yeah. So you mentioned like earlier about while you're over there, the adrenaline pumping, that's not necessarily the case, but a good analogy. So like, I'm guessing you guys had the same thing. When we came back from Iraq, we went kind of through like an offboarding process, right?
Yeah.
And it was really maybe 2 or 3 days. And one of the parts is we all sat in there and we listened to some, I think he was a colonel or a lieutenant colonel, talk to us about PTSD, and we went through TBI. I don't know if you did that, but the shakes together.
Kuwait. Did you guys do it in the same Kuwait?
We did it on our, once we were back in Fort Drum.
Oh, we so did it in Camp Arishon. We did it in Kuwait when we came back. Yeah.
So ours, we were back at Fort Drum, which was nice. We were technically home, but we had a few things to do before we could go back on leave. So he talked to us. He said, you guys are like Jack in the Boxes. You've been living your life for the last year, coiled like a coiled spring, and then something happens and you pop open.
Right.
And I was like, okay, cool, bro. Like, whatever.
Again, how old are you at this point?
I was 24 or 5 or 4.
How old were you when you came back?
25, 26.
Right. Again,
around there.
Still not even a fully capable adult, but you're still capable of going through some pretty heavy shit.
Yeah. So you kind of listen to him. You're like, all right, cool.
You're like, bro, I'm just trying to get out of this. I'm just sitting through this so like I can get, so I just want to go home.
I want to drink.
Go home.
Yeah. Like, we wanted to go drink. I hadn't drank in a year. I want to see if I still know how to do it.
Duncan probably wanted a cigarette, you know?
No, like, actually, the funniest part about it.
It's funny because I'm pretty sure you had some nicotine meds on the table,
still,
which is funny because he used to use those too.
I quit them now.
That's good.
You quit them? Good, man.
I
switched
Fist
when
bump.
I was just kind of go, I smoked and then I went to Afghanistan and then I got into Copenhagen and then I loved my Copenhagen and then I switched to the meds.
So I'll talk to you about those off air afterwards, and I'll tell you why I quit them.
Okay.
It's not for public.
Hashtag drugs.
It's not for public
knowledge.
Consumption. No, but so I actually quit smoking cigarettes while I was deployed to Iraq. Well, that's what I was going to say, which is like the funniest thing to me. Like,
they're so cheap over there too, man.
But it wasn't that. It was just like I had a bet with someone on my truck, and I went. He went for 3 months before he smoked, and he's like, dude, I lost. I smoked a cigarette. And I was like, well, I'll take my money, and then I won't buy cigarettes with it because I've already been 3 months.
Yeah.
So that's...
And you just quit cold turkey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was funny to me, though, because it's like, that's kind of honestly one of the reasons why I joined. My freedom to smoke cigarettes. And then I quit in the most stressful environment I've ever been in my life.
No big deal.
But so when I got back, he talked to us a little bit about kind of the Jack-in-the-Box thing like I was explaining. And in one ear, out the other. Went, did all the testing. Everything was fine for TBI and stuff
like
that. What
kind of testing?
So you do traumatic brain injury. There's actually like a test. I don't remember it very well.
Yeah.
Which bad memory is one of the side effects of
TBI.
Or PTSD, apparently. Yeah. Can impact your memory. But we so we did the testing, and I think a lot of it was really straightforward, like matching shapes.
Okay.
You do like a click one too, and like you have to answer really fast or something like that. Yeah. Like you see the dot or something, about like how your brain connects to seeing things and how fast you can
like
react.
Like your reaction
to it.
Time.
If you, they're all bullshit. Yeah. They're just trying to say we do it. We test them.
If you don't have TBI, you're going to get 100% on this test.
Okay.
Right? Like it's nothing, it's not challenging. It's literally almost like reflexes, cognitive ability to look at a shape and be like, that's a shape. Click.
Right. Like which traumatic brain injury and CTE, which are pretty much the same now. So, but back then they were probably just calling it a traumatic brain injury or TBI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was that. I did fine. And then I booked my flights to go home, hopped on a plane, and I flew from New York, I believe it was Syracuse, New York, to O'Hare. And then I switched flights from O'Hare to San Diego. And we were the last plane to take off out of O'Hare before the storm shut down the whole place. And it was the bumpiest takeoff I've ever been in my life. And I've flown. Like, I grew up in England. I flew all the time. I mean, I just flown from Iraq, straight from Al Asad Air Base, like, back to New York.
In, like, a military airplane, too?
No, it was a charter jet. Oh, okay. So it's like an airline no one's ever heard of.
Even safer.
Full of military personnel, so you know it's not that big of a deal if it goes down, except for the flight attendants. And that didn't bother me. But when we took off out of O'Hare and we hit turbulence, my jack-in-the-box happened. What he was talking about. Something happened that was unexpected.
Like a trigger.
And from that flight forward till about 6 months ago, so we're talking almost 10 years, maybe more than 10 years, I hated flying with a passion.
Wow.
And it's because every time turbulence hit, the jack-in-the-box came out. So that's when I first started seeing something that was different. And I had a less than pleasant experience when I was deployed in a helicopter. They fly a little differently. They don't.
They
cut through the air, but this one just went. Whoosh.
Yeah, you avoid helicopters when you're over there.
Especially Chinooks because double the rotors, double the problems.
Yeah.
So that was my first experience. Is like, I remember thinking to myself,
"What is that?
This is the jack in the box that he's talking about." Because a situation happened, I'm ready to react, and I have adrenaline like pumping through
my
body.
There's nothing for me to do
except sit here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that
cue the anxiety.
Yeah, that got better. Over time, with more exposure to flying, just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And then that kind of jack-in-the-box thing sort of slowly moved from flying into just everyday life.
Right.
Loud noises are a pretty big giveaway. Like, you know, we were walking through a mall and like one of those like A-frame type like
signs
advertisement signs fell over.
It's loud.
Yeah. And that's still there to this day. Yeah. It's minimized, but that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, coming back, that was my first introduction to, this isn't going to be quite the same as it was before I left.
Yeah.
And then getting home and seeing all my friends and they're just like, oh, hey, where have you been? That kind of, that kind of thing. Like they don't care. Not that they're bad people. They just, you were, you know, at work for a year. That's kind of how it feels. They don't realize like what the nature of the work was. And then you always get the question, did you kill anybody? And you're like, I told somebody once, I said, you know, actually it was my boss at work asked me if I killed anybody.
Your boss?
Yeah.
It's pretty inappropriate. You're like, bro, come on.
It was a woman. She was a great, excellent boss, actually. Oh, she was one of my favorite bosses. And she just asked. And I told her, I said, you know, there was someone overseas, and I kept it real vague. It wasn't me. Was in a firefight, and we had Bradleys. Our unit didn't have Bradleys, but scouts use Bradleys. And it has a 25-millimeter cannon on it. So you're talking like the end of this microphone. That's as big as the bullet is that comes out of it.
Oh, wow.
And a young girl ran across the street, and he hit her. And there's nothing left afterwards, right? Yeah. That dude never went out of the wire again. They never went out of the base again on mission. And he still did his part. He did his job, but he never went on mission again.
Can't even imagine.
So I told her that story and I said, imagine if that guy was me and you just asked me if I killed anybody. You're going to bring all of that right back. So that was kind of like the thing.
So think about that before you ask somebody that question next time.
And then also I was like, how's my review for this year?
So am I for that annual raise or what's going on? But, well, and it's funny because Jordan, it's not funny, haha, but funny, ironic. Jordan Peterson always says, Which I know you guys both like him, right? You've listened to
somewhat,
him.
You know.
Yeah, whatever.
I love Jay Peets.
Me too. Yeah, homie for life. So is his kid.
We can get into why he doesn't later.
He says that post-traumatic stress is not necessarily always caused by something that you experienced, but more of something that you did. So it's like it's hard for you to stop reliving that stress or to completely eliminate that stress because it's from something that you actually did. So it's like, oh shit. Like anything that I think about in my life that's reoccurring, and definitely not to the level that you guys are at, but anything that still bothers me to this day or anything that I haven't like rectified is like because of something that I did, something wrong that I did.
Can I interject for a minute? Sure. You said something that Ian and I hear all the time.
Rectified?
No. If he hears it, he lives a very different life than I do. But yeah. No, you mentioned not to the level that you guys have.
Right.
So one of the things that people always say is, oh, I have PTSD, not like yours, not from the military. Yeah. Like I was doing some research because there's a ton of different like methods and therapies out there. And one of the videos I was watching, and I don't even remember what method this was. It's new and it actually deals with left brain, right brain stuff. I forget the name. It was pretty interesting.
You hold the paddles? That's what I did.
I think it might be
that
one.
Thing
I didn't do it. I just researched it.
It's like ER.
Yeah.
I did that. That's why. Okay. There's like a color one they do.
Yeah. So one of the videos of this, one of the doctors that has done the research and stuff on this, she mentioned, she's like, people always have the stigmatism behind PTSD. She said, you can be in fourth grade and go up to present in front of your class and have bad acne and someone can laugh at you. And that can be enough to cause PTSD.
Yeah.
So I think like always thinking that you have to have seen a buddy get blown to pieces or
be super traumatic.
You know, you were on the 300th floor of the World Trade Center. I don't know how many floors it had. But you know what I mean? Like, and you survived barely. It doesn't need to be something like that for it to have huge implications.
It doesn't have to be extreme.
And I mentioned that because it doesn't just impact civilians. It impacts veterans where we think, like, I didn't do enough. I didn't earn the right to have this, what we've almost dubbed like a badge of honor. Like, if you come back with PTSD, it's like you must have seen some shit. It's like, no, not necessarily.
Right.
Like, you could have just gotten, you could have been in the chow hall and a mortar dropped, two clicks away and you still heard it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much.
Okay, I'll strike that from my vocabulary.
Do it.
Forever.
My trauma is just as bad as your trauma.
Can you also strike rectify, please?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Take that one out of there. My experience, similar, but my reactions were different, right? And I think that's how it manifests itself outside of someone that's suffering from PTSD is different for each person. And I think that's what also makes it kind of harder to see. Mm-hmm. I wanted to drink and fight when I got back. I wanted conflict. I liked conflict. You know, I enjoyed that aspect of the military.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't that person where shots happened or even being an MP when I was dealing with somebody that was belligerent. I was the type of person like, I'm up, I'll go take care of this. Yeah. And I enjoyed that a lot. I got a little adrenaline rush. You get this sense of power from it.
I'm like, yay, testosterone.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So by the time I'm getting back, like I'm not fitting in with normal society because I'm drunk all the time and trying to fight people.
Yeah.
You know, either physically or argumentatively.
Right.
You know, and then I'm like, why can't I function in society? You know, like why does everyone in my job hate me?
Yeah, why is everything so hard?
And then
leave that bottle of Jack?
Yeah, exactly. So that started this really vicious, vicious cycle for me where I would constantly be in conflict with others and then be upset with myself or upset with the world internally why they hated me. So I would drink.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle went on I got out in 2012 until the end of 2017.
Yeah.
And the only reason that cycle had to end is because I lost, I think it was 7 jobs in 1 year.
Yeah.
And I was like 260 pounds. I went
damn, 260?
Yeah, I was big.
All right.
And I was getting evicted from my apartment. I had no place to go. So I went to the VA. Like, I was like,
you're like, something's got to give.
What's
I got to do
guys?
Something.
And I went to the VA in South Dallas. I was like, hey, like, I don't, you know, I'm not functioning even in the slightest of words. Like, you know, they're, and that's why I get back to like Jordan Peterson because he talks about addiction at one point and he just says, just make your bed. And he gives that story about some guy he grew up with.
He doesn't just say that.
Yeah, but just his analogy.
I say give him another chance.
I listened to that in 12 Rules of Life. And then he used the example of some guy he grew up with and saying that he never like did the things he was supposed to do and eventually got addicted to drugs and alcohol. And he kind of associated
it's
with that.
It's a lot deeper
And then
than
he
that.
Got addicted to pain pills.
For sure.
Jordan Peterson did. So I was like, I wonder if he struck that from the record. So he kind of like,
I don't think he struck that from the record, but well, I think his what happened to him was a lot different, but that I digress. That's
I think
not
his knowledge
to this
on addiction was not great. You know, I think he makes some other good points, but I think he needed to dive a little bit deeper into
Well, and you know what? The universe is funny that way because someone speaking on something that maybe they haven't experienced and then they experience it and they're like, wow, this is fucking torrential.
Addiction is heavily associated with this trauma.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You know, a lot of people that you find in today's society, I know it's big. We talk about the opioid crisis.
Yes.
There's another one. We got a current opioid crisis going on that no one talks about. Everyone's popping Adderall and Vyvanse, and now meth's on a huge rise.
Yeah.
So
everybody's on speed.
Exactly.
Everybody's using speed all the time.
Yeah. So that's the next thing when all these people have horrible and they want to put that in the news. But that's going on right now.
That's going on right now. The opioid crisis, meaning like pharmaceutical companies are just allowed to create addicts under the guise of helping people.
And now there's also the thing talking about microdosing is cool and all this stuff. Okay, so drugs.
Just a little bit of heroin?
Yeah, just a little bit of acid. Just don't do a lot.
Okay, first of all, calm down. It's psilocybin with mushrooms.
Okay,
plants.
But with somebody with trauma and you start associating drugs and alcohol, they start to self-medicate. It's a dangerous
road. Well, I don't
road.
Even think that they have to associate drugs and alcohol. They start self-medicating with whatever. People can self-medicate with fucking supplements.
Exactly.
My mom does it. She goes to the freaking health food store every time something's wrong with her, and she adds another pill.
But, you know, I don't – yeah, but, like, it's a lot different if I drink 2/5 and start driving around my vehicle.
Oh, I know.
Than someone, you know, taking a bunch of vitamin C. You know, so – like
that's true. You're right. You know? Okay.
Or the effects of drugs and alcohol on that. So, like, that's why I kind of – you know, I digress in that a little bit and I'd say, hey, let's take a step back and take a look at these things.
Yeah.
I'm not like, let's not go back to the 50s and ban everything and just shame people for doing those things because some people could do it normally.
Yeah.
But if you have trauma, if you have PTSD or if you have something that is going on with you that is not fully dealt with and you start combining drugs and alcohol with that.
Mind-altering substances, regardless of its,
it's not going to end well.
Right. Well, and that's like kind of what...
And you vast majority of them die.
Right. Well, and that's like the difference between like... not the difference, but when my dad died, I was like... And I said it on the last episode too. I'm actually pretty proud of myself that I didn't get drunk or use drugs to numb the pain.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to feel everything. I wanted to experience everything. I wanted to cry when I needed to cry. I wanted to be angry when I needed to be angry. And one of my friends gave me a gift is a grief journal where you talk about... you know, like the experience and like how you found out that they were going to die or how you felt when they died and all these things. I think that and another thing I wanted to say about, you know, you guys and people that serve in the military, whether it's men or women, but particularly men, and you guys are different, right? Like I feel like, and other people might be different too, but I feel like men are not encouraged to talk about their feelings ever. So not only do you carry that stigma of like having all of this trauma from the military or trauma from life, it doesn't necessarily have to be from the military because other men have trauma that they don't discuss. And then you come home and then it's like, you're supposed to just assimilate and be married and be normal, right? Like you're just supposed to come back and then everything's just supposed to be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The government's not going to, you know, provide you with a therapist or any kind of alternative treatments or therapies for recovering from coming back. Well, I mean, maybe not when you guys came back, but.
When I came back, like it was, I'm not a fan of the government just by nature of the way they behave, but I'm not going to knock them because they paid for my schooling.
Right.
They did take into account the injuries that I received.
They didn't just pay for your schooling. You served the country to earn said schooling.
There's a lot of benefits from...
Yeah, they don't drop you and just say, good luck. Like Vietnam vets would come back and like 2 days later they were out.
Yeah.
So there I go comparing my experience to theirs again. But I'm saying like they have improved.
Right.
Still not a fan in general of taxes and the government, but they have improved a lot when it comes to taking care of veterans.
Okay.
And So yeah, but you're right though, came back and I think the people around me, and I don't know if this was your experience, but I didn't want to push my problems onto other people.
Right.
They expected me just to come back and kind of like go about my business.
Well, you're a man, you're supposed to man up, you're just supposed to own this shit, and you're supposed to keep walking and yeah. everything's just supposed to be.
Well, he said it too, and like, because he went through it, and it's almost going to become, if there's a next war, it's our responsibility, but mine was a Vietnam vet that helped me. You know, it's usually like the Vietnam vets that kind of go through it. It sounds like one talked to you about it, and one, mine was a Vietnam vet that actually walked me through he was actually a doctor that did the trauma therapy and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, like, if you're experiencing any kind of issues from mm-hmm. your past and they're affecting the way in the future you want to go to, like yeah. you can be experiencing some kind of trauma, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And what he's speaking about in terms of the government, like the government's slow. It's a slow moving ship. It doesn't react well to things.
Not efficient.
Society, we don't react well to things. Like when PTSD was first talked about, I got out in 2012, it was a lot harder for me to get a job as a veteran.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I'm a crazy veteran.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, like yeah. you can't hire a veteran.
Granted, you were drinking and fighting all the time.
Well, yeah. this is before they knew that.
And you have red hair.
But yeah. This is before
he
they
is
knew that.
He is a soulless ginger, yeah. let's be real.
This is before that they would experience that once they hired me. And then they'd be like, oh, we're right. We can't hire veterans. So I...
Shit,
so
this guy's nuts.
I probably took away some hiring opportunities for veterans by acting like that. But like, I did.
No, you didn't.
But, you know, it took a lot of time, and you talk about still today, I have to, you know, learn to deal with those sort of things. You know, like I apply a lot of, you know, I got meditation in my life. Like next to my bed is the Ryan Holiday daily stoic quotes, like the daily kind of,
yeah,
you know, just a sitting.
Well, and you yeah. and I have had these conversations too. You like to, when we first met, you were really into like secular Buddhism. And
still, yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like that's yeah. still something that you're definitely interested in and you're still into. And
yeah, I'm interested in the, you know, you mentioned Jordan Peterson, like Sam Harris does a great job, but he's got some weird ideas, but he, yeah. when it comes to mindfulness and neurology, he's done a lot of work.
Yeah.
And like,
I like when they debate, it's like my favorite.
Yeah. That stuff applies a lot to, you know, anybody with any kind of trauma or mm-hmm. like the number one way they treat eating disorders now is mindfulness yeah. practices.
Yep.
So it doesn't have to necessarily be like a religious aspect of it, but yeah. there is a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
Into kind of bringing yourself back into reality a little bit. Because the biggest thing for me, and I don't want to speak for Duncan, but I think a lot of it is what it takes to start getting help is this. If something happens where you're humiliated to the point that you know, your ego sets down a little bit, and then you go, shit, man, something ain't right.
Like when you hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And you're like, I literally have nothing else. What the fuck am I doing?
Rock bottom's a tough word because I don't, again, that's also, you can't have PTSD unless you're in the military. Well, I can't have a rock bottom unless I'm like sleeping under a bridge, you know, like, cause that's
everybody. Well, I mean, you lost your apartment and you got fired 7 times.
For me, it was different.
Say that says rock bottom.
I'm speaking.
No, I still had some downward potential.
No,
I had some rings on that ladder to drop. Trust me. I could have gone a different.
Okay, that's
but
true.
It's also, I'm saying that for anybody listening that might be suffering, they're like, oh, you know, I keep my job. I didn't.
I assimilate nicely. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm
none
fine.
Of that happened
yeah.
to me. I'm not that Ian guy out there getting drunk and fighting people, getting
fucking
fired from
Ian
jobs.
Guy.
You know, like that's not what's happening to me. But it doesn't mean you're not suffering from something that
true.
In your past. That
true.
Yeah.
Is I always say this. If there's something in your past that continuously getting in the way and the person you want to be now and in the future, and it's been happening over a long period of time,
yeah.
something's wrong.
You should address it.
Yeah, because you're not getting to where you want to be.
Right.
Why aren't you constantly not getting... It's not society.
True.
You know, there could be some things that happen in your life that bring you down, whatever, that we all deal with that. It's called adversity. You know, we have to overcome it. But if you're going on a couple years, 3 years, and you keep trying the same thing over and over again, and something's holding you back, you might want to go talk to a professional.
You might want to look in the mirror and then figure it out.
You don't have to be, you know, chugging fifths of alcohol, you know, and losing your jobs and, you know, going to hospitals to get help. Like, that doesn't have to happen.
For there to be real trauma, unresolved trauma.
Or for the symptoms of your trauma to be real, right? Like, you don't have to get to where Ian was at or even where I was at. Because, like, I mean, we haven't talked about it much, but, like, my PTSD led to a divorce.
Yeah.
Which...
I wanted to make sure that both of you knew that anything you don't want to talk about is not, you don't have to. I didn't want to bring it up, but you're more than allowed to.
No,
for sure.
I'm an open book about it. And I think that's one of the big things is like, I talk to people in my workplace. When I was, I mean, I'm not like actively out there dating anymore, obviously, because I met someone, but when I was actively dating, I would tell them before we met, like, I have PTSD, not the Ian kind, right? Like, not, and I would tell them, I'd be like, not the violent kind, because that's the first thing they think of. Yeah. Military personnel, PTSD, they're going to throw me off a balcony. Yeah. Like, every
that's
time.
That's the, really?
They
that's,
think it's violent. Not necessarily the balcony, but yeah, they think it's violent.
I would only fight assholes, though.
See, so when I hear that stuff, when I hear that stuff, I immediately turn into the therapist, and I'm like, so how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, for that to be the case, though, is a lot of people, like, mine didn't manifest the same way that his did.
It doesn't. Right.
And it, I don't know if yours, like, mine, like, was pretty okay for the first, like, 8 years I was back from Iraq. Like, I didn't like flying, so I didn't fly as much.
Right.
Or I would, like, take a Xanax and fly, or drink and fly.
Right.
But I was not using substances. Like, I, on the outside, I looked successful. I got my bachelor's degree. I got into a good job. I became a manager at the company I was working at very quickly. Like, I was successful in the professional environment.
So societally, you looked normal.
Right. However, the problem was internal, for sure. Depression and just a sense of what's the point.
Complacency a little bit, like...
Yeah, just checking the box every day.
Like, whatever.
But the problem that I had is I felt like I volunteered to go to war. Like, when I signed up, I know I joked about the cigarette thing, but I did want to see what the Band of Brothers was really like. Like, I didn't want to join and go into the Air Force and stay here in the U.S. or join in the Army and do something that I could do in the civilian life.
Right. You
know? Like, I wanted to join in a combat arms role, and I wanted to go to war. So... I did that, but then I felt like I signed up to do that knowingly, like during a time of conflict in our country, I signed up and said, I want to do a job that will put me on the front lines.
Right.
And that's why they were like, well, you can be infantry. And I was like, that sounds kind of boring. And they're like, well, do you want to be a Cav Scout? And I was like, sure. That was kind of the comment, like, cause I didn't want to be like vanilla infantry. Like if I could go back and do it again, I probably would have just joined the infantry cause they're fine. They're okay.
They're fine too.
They're cool.
Don't tell any of my Cav Scout buddies I ever said that because there's a rivalry. But so when I came back, I didn't want other people to know that there was anything wrong because I didn't feel like, you know, like you, for example, as a friend, like I don't want to dump my burdens on you. Like you don't get the thanks for being a veteran. You don't get the 20% discount at Noble or whatever. Yeah. Like when you're buying your CrossFit shoes, like you don't get that shit.
We get 20% there? Really?
Oh. I think so.
I know. I was about to say you should get them.
What's up? I just bought a pair. Huge 20%.
Did you get the high tops or low tops?
Low tops because it's not the 80s.
Are you ever embarrassed to do that? Like if you go to some place and like they're like, ask oh, we do a veteran discount?
Yeah.
And you're like,
I never asked for it because I don't have an ID and I don't just like carry my DD-214 in my pocket.
You can get it. But in Texas, you get veteran on your license.
Oh.
Yeah, it says it. Yeah, mine says it on my license.
Now you like Texas again.
You just have to go. Yeah, you just
not
have,
really.
America.
Yeah, you just have to go to the... DMV and show them your DD-214 that put on your license.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my problem is like I had a pretty normal
get you out of tickets
looking
sometimes.
Smart.
Never had a speeding ticket.
Whatever.
Shut the don't say that out loud. You're going to get one now that you leave.
I say it all the time.
Driving your dad mobile now.
Yeah, I know.
You're not driving the Audi anymore.
Got rid of the Audi. Yeah. Got responsible. So yeah, that mindset of not being able to like push that trauma or problem on someone else. You're like, I'm going to deal with it myself or I'll talk to a professional. But I'm not drinking a fifth of alcohol and getting in fights all the time, or right. I'm not living under a bridge like the
but
Vietnam vets.
Did you personally talk to a professional? Did either of you do
that? Yeah, I did.
I have a friend who will remain nameless.
Yeah.
And they have their PhD in psychology.
Got it. But you made an effort to talk to someone.
Lot.
Got it.
And they were also a veteran from the Marines, Iraq, Afghanistan. So I have a professional that I talk to in a non-professional environment. And then I also, one of the things we didn't really touch on is like, I have my primary care physician. He had, when he was going through residency, his best friend who was also going through residency did a lot of work with PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I work with him on the chemical front.
Right.
And then I worked with my other friend on the more
emotional psychological front.
Yeah.
See, but that's like really impressive. And that's why I was saying you guys are different than say someone in like my dad's generation, because my dad really struggled. And I think that what people don't understand is like, my dad was a baby, right? He was signed up when he was 17, went in when he was 18, served the 4 years overseas. And granted, he wasn't in like a war or whatever, but again, that doesn't really matter. But everything played out in different ways. Like he wouldn't talk about his feelings. He didn't talk about like, anything that he went through. And then eventually that did lead to a divorce and, you know, some serious like drug and dependency issues and a couple of stays in the psych ward. And
yeah, there was
so many things.
I got meatloaf though. So if you're ever, you
know. Which ward? I'm feeling a little bit hungry and a little bit crazy.
America.
Yeah, you want
but can you get your 20% discount?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
But yeah, so he dealt with a lot of like the substance abuse and all of that stuff.
It's very
but
common.
Also, he came from a different generation where, I mean, I commend both of you as, and this sounds, I'm not trying to sound sexist because as women, we process our issues by talking about them, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are way more prone to talk about our problems than men typically, societally, are encouraged to talk about their problems.
Men will eventually, like for my, I can't speak for all men, but my experience is when it finally started to me, and actually I want to go back to a point that Duncan made really well, especially people with PTSD. We'll do a really good job of making the rest of the world think our life's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and up until that point in 2017, I started losing my jobs and so forth. Well, I got out in 2012. So there was a long period of time where I was having a very successful career.
Right.
I was making six figures a year.
Looking normal.
Really nice apartment.
Yeah.
But we're really good at doing that to make sure the rest of the world knows we're okay until shit hits the fan.
Right.
You know?
But on the inside, you're like...
Mine was the craziness of losing a bunch of jobs. Duncan's was, it sounds like a divorce. Like there's something, eventually a catalyst happens and eventually breaks.
And that's when you can't hide it anymore.
Yeah. Exactly. You're,
Because like everything was like, and that's the thing, like my parents said to me, they're like, we thought everything was fine. And I was like, no, I told you like things were rough, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Yeah, and at the
they're
time,
like, but wait, but work's going good, and you have a house, and you have a wife just, and two kids. Like, what do you mean?
You're,
that's wrong.
That's what you're supposed to do. You got it going on, you know.
Yeah, and then I think that when it broke, that was when like my dad's a veteran too, and his father was in World War II.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then on my mom's side, her father was a conscientious objector for religious reasons, but he was a farmer during World War II in England.
Nice,
And then also was in the fire brigade. So, and London. During the Blitz, you might as well have been in the trenches in World War One. It was brutal and gruesome.
Pretty much anyway,
so all of them had it, and they all dealt in different ways. So like when I had it, my dad and my mom like reached out to a friend that was shot in the neck during Vietnam, and he had a real rough time of it with PTSD and stuff. So they started researching and doing a lot of stuff, which was really helpful.
That is helpful.
But if I'd have been more open about it about 7 years earlier. Like we
could have mitigated some damage, but
That's how it always, I feel like that's the problem, and that's how it always is. The problem is some people that are suffering, you know, luckily I got treatment, I got help, you know, sober for the most part, had little slips here and there. I can't drink alcohol. I still don't do that today because it still causes those issues. But some people like, you know, suicides are high for some reason. Like that's why they're high.
I know.
You know, some people, that is their breaking moment when they take their own life.
Yeah.
Like that's the moment when everybody's like, oh, I didn't know anything was wrong with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's, you know, what Duncan was talking about is like, I should have done something about it earlier. Well, luckily for us, ours wasn't that.
Right.
Do you know? And there was a point in that 2017, I didn't have any guns in my house. Like there's a reason why they weren't.
On purpose.
On purpose. Like they couldn't be there because I had no idea what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I would drink 3 days straight. Like I just wouldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And in that state, like I had no what's going to happen.
No.
Right. So that's a big thing that to bring up. So like if people are suffering from these things or you have an issue, like you have the inclination going back in your head, like something ain't right. And you're trying to power through it. Like good luck, you know, go get help. Like, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a man or a woman or whatever. It's your pride and your ego is so high in your way and your life's going to shit. And, like,
and I mean, you're also
you don't need to do that.
Concerned about like public perception, right? Like what are people going to think about me or what, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Maybe not like your friends, but like,
well,
are people going to think I'm crazy?
Yeah.
I'm talking to a therapist.
Oh, they knew I was crazy.
I think for me,
it's like I was too far gone.
Yeah, they knew what was up. They liked me.
I mean, I've known you for like an hour, and I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, you're on point with that diagnosis.
You started just like, hey, you look
he
like
took the hat off.
And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
A ginger.
Like, I look like Colonel Winters, and now you're like, I don't really. It doesn't act like Colonel Winters, man. This guy.
Colonel Winters was a Quaker. Yeah, but for that, where you're saying about, I've actually, one of the like the big breakthroughs that I've had like is I don't care if people think I'm weird like or crazy.
When was this? When did that happen?
After the divorce. Probably because I went through a lot of turmoil. Like, and I don't know if your experience was the same, but PTSD can bring the worst or the best out in other people when they're trying to help you. Mm. If there's anything that drives me crazy, it's like, oh, you have PTSD. And mine manifests, like, it started off more depression. Mm-hmm. And up to last year, very bad anxiety to the point where last year, like, I remember being, like, on the phone with my mother being like, if I didn't have two kids, like, I would blow my brains out.
Yeah.
Like, it was that bad. Yeah. But I decided, I was, like, mission-oriented. I have two kids. I provide for those children. I love them, and I never want them to think they're responsible for what happened to me.
Yes.
So it's not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. And I just made that call. I made that decision. And I do own two firearms, but I was just like, no.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my hard stop.
For a long time, I had, you know, when I knew it could close to the end, like the last, and this is a horrible way to live, but the last thought before I went to sleep every night is I should kill myself. And the first thought I had in the morning when I woke up is I should kill myself.
Jesus.
Every night. For years, mm-hmm. you know, years going through that, going, oh, that's normal. You know, like, you know, my life's good.
Yeah.
You know, if you're that comes up in your head, man, you should do something.
Yes.
Like, you should do something now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can get back to some resemblance of life. Like, we're all weird. We're all different. We're all human. You know,
yeah.
The people that, like, you know, project that their lives are perfect, like, they're more fucked up than what you think, you know, but that's the big scary part right there. You know, like, you're not dealing with something that is a headache. You're dealing with something, you're dealing with a very deadly mental illness that you need to go get help for immediately, or it's going to end badly.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it's scary. Like, the first time that thought pops into your head, it scares you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people, well, you wouldn't even miss me if I killed myself, right?
Yeah.
No. It's not like that. It's like you're inside your own head listening to yourself talk about killing yourself.
Yeah.
Planning, thinking.
And you're not. Yeah. You're like, well, calm down, dude. Like,
yeah. Hold up. Where are we going?
But dude's not calming down.
Yeah. You know, it's two conversations
it's
going
really
on.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying because you sit down afterwards and you're like, I literally just planned out how to kill myself.
Yeah.
I didn't get quite to that point because I was just like, my other voice, I guess you would say, man, we really do sound crazy. The angel and the devil.
Yeah, for sure.
But the angel voice was definitely like two kids. And then that would shut down the conversation every time.
Right.
Nice.
Which was good. But the other thing I was going to point out, like we mentioned, like as far as getting help, talking about it, like I texted one of my buddies last night who's a veteran. I went through basic training with him. And he just posted some kind of stuff where the last few days he was more active on social media. And I was like, I'm going to reach out to him.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to him. He'd recently moved across the country. His girl just left him. And so I was like, dude, I've got extra points on my card. Like, if you want to come down here. And he's like, I appreciate it. And that kind of thing, right? He's not, you know, chugging a gallon of vodka. He's not sitting in his room thinking about ending it. Like, he's just heartbroken.
Yeah.
And knowing that community's out there, I think was really helpful. And I told him, I was like, dude, if you ever want to come down here, like, come down. We'll go out. We'll have fun.
Yeah.
So you don't, I think a lot of people are like, I have PTSD. I need to quit drinking, go to AA. It's not the same for everybody.
Right.
And to
me, the plan of action is not
like,
the same.
No. I still go out. Like, I'm going out to is it the Rough Riders baseball team?
Yeah, I went there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm going
there
tonight.
And
I'm going to have some.
You're already in the area. You should just hang out here.
Yeah, my girlfriend lives in Plano.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So
we took you know, or a little stepdaughter.
Yeah,
yeah, stepdaughter. Or-ish. Yeah, pretty much. I guess, you know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe because we're not married yet. But
my girlfriend's daughter
that I live with and, you know, care for. So, and then like another 10-year-old.
You can sort of like, say stepdaughter, I think, at this point.
Right. I think we're good.
Yeah.
It's but not a formal podcast.
When you take two little girls to a baseball game, man, they're like, dude, they don't want to watch much baseball. You know, they're 10.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like one of those little girls. I drink warm beer and eat cold hot dogs.
Yeah,
that's all I do.
The hot dogs are pretty good.
This
man.
Is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going out to do that tonight, and I'm able to get to that point, but all of last year, probably about 8 months, I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to do anything because I was terrified of having a panic attack. And it was that same jack-in-the-box mentality had bled over from flying only to just life in general. So I would get like a twinge or a pain or something, and I'm like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
To the point where like my mom used to be a nurse, and she came out. I'm a 35-year-old dude. I was 34 at the time because it was before my birthday. But I'm 34 years old, successful, doing fine financially, like – my boss thinks I'm crushing it. Everything's great. And then I call my mother and say, can you come stay with me?
You're like, Mom, I have crippling anxiety.
Yeah.
I can't leave the house.
So she came out and I kept saying like the anxiety has physical things. So I felt like there was a hot steak just 100%. Pushed through my chest.
Yes.
And I'm like, there's something wrong with my heart. And my mom's like,
That's not your heart.
That's not where your heart is. Yeah. And then I stopped her. I was like, don't tell me where it is then. Yeah. Because then I'll start having pains there because that's just how it works.
Yes. Yeah.
So I had to, I went through, and this is the other thing that just drives me crazy. I did reach out and talk to a psychiatrist. Worst experience of my life.
I know.
Not because she was a bad psychiatrist, but because she was so overworked, so many patients.
Yeah. Right.
So she just, I could tell by the way that she was prescribing stuff. The first thing that she prescribed me was there was like a daily pill that I took.
Yeah.
That works great for some people. It's very low risk. So they always start you there.
Yeah.
Of course.
Did nothing for me.
Yeah. Right.
And then when I was having like an in the moment panic attack, sometimes they'll provide you with like Xanax or Klonopins or something. They gave me an antihistamine, which is like a Benadryl.
Yeah.
And all it did, it was the most terrifying experience. I was having a panic attack and I took a couple of them because that's what I was supposed to take two if I was having one.
Yeah.
It basically made me so tired I couldn't move.
I know.
Paralyzed me.
Yeah.
So you're like,
fear and the anxiety was just like, ooh.
Still there. Running rampant.
So I kind of went through that whole process and then I stopped talking to her and I went back to my doctor and I said, look, you put me on Prozac first. I didn't like that. And some people love it and it works great for them.
Sure.
It didn't work well for me.
It's like the standard. Yeah. That's where they start.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he put me on something called Trintellix and that didn't work for me because I couldn't sleep on it. Then I went to this other one, which was Buspirone or something like that. That didn't work for me. I still had anxiety.
Yeah.
Finally put me on a different something that he said is his favorite, but once you're on it, you need to stay on it because there are bad withdrawals.
Okay.
So that's what I take now. And every morning take 100 milligrams of, it's called like Prestique or Desvenlafaxine or something. And that works great for me. I have no side effects or anything. However, every person's journey is different.
100%.
And it took me a year. Well, actually, even when I first met you back in the day, that was when I was on Prozac.
Yeah.
So it's taken me 2 or 3 years to get to a point of having something, because I do have a chemical imbalance, right? Like it's there.
Yeah.
Having something in my life that actually like helps and then brought me to a point where it's like now I work out every day. The gym is therapy for me.
Yeah.
And I talk to people about my issues, like my friends, like, no, they check in on me, like built a community, that kind of stuff around myself. But it took such a long time.
It's a process. Yeah.
That's a huge, I mean, like I'm an economics major. We talk about barriers to entry.
I'm an economics major too. Oh, yeah. I graduated an econ degree. Yeah.
What do you do? Get out of here with your life. So like barriers to entry, like that's a huge barrier to entry for people getting help. Is you call up and say, I need to speak to a therapist. Sure, your wait time is about 6 years.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's nothing
there.
Luck. The best thing you can do is like, what, are you going to go to the ER if you want to talk to somebody immediately?
No.
That's not.
Then you get to go stay in one of those fancy psych wards.
They give you 30 seconds in the ER,
if you're in there too long.
30 seconds in the ER and a meatloaf.
Yeah. That's where they'll put you. That's what puts you in a psych ward.
America.
Or, here's your meatloaf and here's your locked door, man. Yeah, that's true. And the other hard part about it is too, and I don't want to discourage people, like everybody's, like, I don't know, not necessarily cure is the way to put it, is different.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan can consume alcohol and takes medication. I don't take medication, but I can't consume alcohol.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I was going to say, if you felt comfortable like talking about that process and the like being sober and, and proclaiming that you're sober and saying it out loud.
Yeah, sober with slips is what I've called in the past. So I'm not going to come.
Well, you're not perfect and nobody's perfect. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, not everybody's. I mean, some people have the ability to be sober for, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
The majority of the past since 2017, since I went into, and when I went to the VA, I went to rehab there.
Right.
In South Dallas during Christmas and so forth, for the most part. There's been slips like for maybe for a weekend or a week, but most part I've been sober.
Right.
And every time I do, it comes back. Like there's, again, there's no cure for me. Like I'm going to get back into that stage where I want some adventure and I want some fun and I want some conflict.
Or you want to go off path.
Yeah. And then I'm in Oklahoma or something like that, starting shit,
that's where you end up.
Putting I don't
shit.
Know.
You need to stop drinking forever.
Yeah.
Find a better state to end up.
Putting shit on my Instagram story at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And 3 a.m. then your friends
have
to tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, that they're worried about you.
Yeah. So that's my part of my,
Well, and it's kind of similar
it,
to like, what Duncan said is like, he's like, I go to the gym now. I know I have to take medication. I know I have to check in with myself on these things to ensure that I stay on the right path.
Exactly.
Which and is the same thing for you. It's just different steps.
Yeah. Everyone's suffering, and I do a lot of the, we're talking about studying like the Buddhism, Stoicism, those sort of meditations, and the practical application of those throughout my day help a lot.
Yep,
and I do those things because they're kind of my prescription form.
I think that this took some self exploration on both of your parts to try to find what it is that worked for you to combat the side effects or the effects from PTSD.
Yeah, you go to the doctor and you got a broken leg, they know what's up. We got you. You go in there and go, hey, like you don't know how to really describe it, but
exactly.
And medical professionals will tell you, we don't know a lot about it.
Yeah. Right.
Like it's kind of like you go in and you say, like, I have an infection. They're just going to throw pills at you until it goes away.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's kind of a little bit what they do with PTSD.
Right.
And it's not necessarily just pills, but they're going to throw at, like, try this, because it's different with everybody.
Yeah.
Like some people's PTSD manifests in anger.
Yep.
Some's depression. Some is manic behavior, which I think kind of like the going out and fighting, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Some is anxiety where they don't want to go out. They don't want to interact with anybody. They don't want to change their routine or change what they eat. Like, all of that stuff is it. So they have to figure out and customize a solution for each person.
Yeah.
But I think the first part is just starting. And so like you've said, you've encouraged people multiple times, like that are listening, if you are having these issues, get help.
Yeah.
I would encourage people, if you know people that are having these issues, go talk to them. Like, if you've earned that right, like don't just walk up to some stranger.
Random.
But if you've earned that right.
You seem a little messed up, man. Yeah. You know, like.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah. But once you've earned that right to be a person in their life that they'll talk to about these things.
Yeah.
Offer to set up the appointment, like offer to do all the legwork, remove every barrier to entry for them getting in and actually getting help.
Okay.
And that helps. Like my parents offered to do that for me. Like my dad made calls for me. And again, I'm 34, 35 at the time that this is going on.
Yeah.
I needed it. Like I needed someone to come in and do those things for me.
It's tough to deal with like bureaucracies of hospitals and VA when you're having mental health.
Yeah.
It's tough when you're not, but like when you're having mental health, it's hard to go deal with a medical bureaucracy, you know?
Exactly.
You're
like, and it'll push the anger out. Like for me, like I remember calling and leaving a very unpleasant voicemail on the therapist's or the psychiatrist's, you know, it wasn't her personal one, but it was like the voicemails place where you could leave one. And I like cussed him out. I was like super mad. And then I called back like 20 minutes later.
You're
and
like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But it's because they said they were going to call me at 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
It's 5 o'clock. I called them. They're closed.
And you're like,
and I'm like, I've been waiting all day to talk to you so I can get something to help me. Cause I'm like, every morning I woke up and I said, if this is going to be my life for the rest of my life, I don't really care if I get hit by a truck.
Right.
Yeah. And they didn't. And then she called me like 5:17 or something, which I was like, ugh. Like I felt bad, but I'm at the same time, don't tell me you're going to call me at five when like everything in my life is hinging on this phone call.
Literally.
So having someone else there that can kind of work through the bureaucracy and maybe set more like in-person appointments. I was doing everything over the phone because of COVID, but like in-person appointments, stuff like that, where you can really sit down and dig into stuff. Like that was like almost being like the executive assistant for
someone
your PTSD friend.
That's
important.
It's funny when you said that's such a military thing. Like you told me 5 o'clock and it is not 4:45.
Well,
and you're
calling
me.
I'm calling in with PTSD from my time in Iraq.
5:17.
Like, if you're a therapist, you should know this by now.
No, I do the same thing. You're
Like, aren't you the professional or what?
Like I got here 15 minutes early. Like I can't do it.
Ian's like I'm here early. I always get here early.
I don't know what to do. And then I'm just like confused. I'm just sitting around.
I was in my car. I'm like, it's 8 minutes. Am I civilian enough for you now?
I'm like, Ian, I'm right around the corner. I'll be there in 5 seconds.
I'm like
hanging
out in the car, man.
I will be there.
Just looking around.
Right? I was like, my thought is like, I didn't want to get here too soon because I didn't want to be like some random dude in a neighborhood that nobody knows me and then they call the cops on me or something. Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, I'm in an uncomfortable environment.
Yeah.
Before that, like coming to this last year would have not happened.
Right.
Because of the PTSD and the anxiety.
And I think that that's another thing too, is like having, because I started texting you guys last year about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about it. And I think that the universe.
Oh, we should have done that one. I could have been drunk and he could have been having a panic attack. That would have been
great. That would have been a great
If you brought your bottle. So here's one of the interesting things why a lot of people with anxiety go to alcohol.
Yeah.
I probably would have been like, give me some of that.
Yeah.
Because alcohol and clonopins or clonazepam, they work on the same part of the brain, which is why you can't drink and take them.
Oh.
You say,
and
I say
you
can't.
Black out.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
I
highly advise against it.
Yeah. I never do because that's part of the anxiety is I'm pretty careful with.
Yeah.
What I like, whether I'm drinking, I drink a lot of water at the same time, whatever the case is. But drinking like helps with anxiety, which is one of the reasons why if you have PTSD and you end up drinking more and more and more, it's probably not just because you like getting drunk. It's because it's finally like you can relax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, also a major depressant too. So it's
the next day your anxiety is 10 times worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like you're delaying it. You're temporarily delaying.
The hangover is like times 100.
Well, you're delaying and amplifying it.
Well, you get rid of hangover pretty easily.
Yeah, just drink more.
Yeah, just keep you drinking. Yeah.
That's not how I work. I would die. I would literally die.
No,
I'm fucking worse.
I was joking with one of my friends about it. It's like when I first joined the military, we would do brigade runs, and that's like 5,000 people, so they're super slow. Mm-hmm. So when I first joined the military, it's like, oh, we're doing a brigade run tomorrow. Let's get fucking wasted. Get super shitty drunk, go to bed at 3, wake up at 5, and you're just going to run 6 miles super slow. Whatever. I can do that in my sleep, literally. then when I got back from Iraq, hey, we have a brigade run tomorrow. All of the veterans that had just come back were like, oh, okay, I'll be in bed by 8 then.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
I don't do so good in the morning.
I can't manage that at all.
Yeah.
Well, I unfortunately have another guest coming at 12:30, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this, and thank you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for doing this. This was like very informative. And for anybody out there, I know you guys have said it multiple times, like for anybody out there who feels like they're experiencing trauma, post-traumatic stress, any of those things, TBI, CTE, anything.
And if you're a veteran, just you can call suicide hotlines or civilian suicide hotlines.
Yeah.
If you just Google, if you got a phone, and any time you call any number from the VA, the first thing it asks you is you're having suicidal thoughts, hit 7.
Okay.
Like any number that you'll call in the VA. Yeah. I don't care if you're calling about a GI bill or a prescription or just trying to make an appointment, they always put the automated message.
Okay.
So call one of those numbers.
Okay.
Like if you're having that type, if you're in that space. Because you're not trying to solve your problems right now. You're just trying to survive the day.
Right.
And surviving the day means you got an opportunity to solve your problems.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to reach out to
us. The other thing I'd say, even if you're not at that point, like we all have friends on social media that we deployed with, that we were in the military with.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guarantee if you reach out to your old lieutenant, you reach out to your old sergeant, you reach out to just one of your battle buddies, like...
I'm going to go see one of my buddies soon. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's still in the military. He's a master chief down in Georgia. Like, he's like, I'm going to go hang out with him.
But so, they'll be there.
Like, great.
Guys don't always proactively like, hey, how are you doing?
Right.
Like, that's not normal. I was actually telling my girlfriend, like, that's not normal. We usually are just like, I haven't seen you in 7 years. How you been? Good. Cool. Want to get a drink? Yes.
I know you're
like, that's it. So if you're struggling proactive, reach out to somebody that's like a veteran as well or someone that's still in the military and talk to them. They'll have your back.
Like,
it's an honor to do that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both seriously so much for being here today. And for those of you who are listening, please like and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. 5 stars only, please. Thank you. If you want to find us, we are on every podcast platform, Spotify, iTunes, and on YouTube for video. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.